G7, number 16B.
So Einstein at the beginning of this century showed that there must be a fourth dimension. The fourth dimension is time. So he had a space-time continuum. That it was his concept of the universe. It is a concept that we, who are not educated in this kind of physics, can hardly understand. It's very difficult to have a consciousness in this universe that sees the universe not in a three-dimensional sense, but in a four-dimensional sense. He had that ability, and it is said that very few people can really have that sense, that consciousness of a four-dimensional universe. A space, you know that space is three-dimensional, length, breadth, height, that's also three dimension in which we live. Everything we do, we measure according to these three dimensions, length and breadth and height. And he introduced a fourth time, a space-time continuum. It is hardly possible for us to understand it, or say we may perhaps understand it intellectually, but not so that it is a living universe within us, a four-dimensional universe. But since Einstein, really, many new dimensions have come up, so that up to date, they speak about a 10-dimensional universe, so that they can calculate mathematically. That's interesting, that first they can always calculate it first mathematically before it has its practical application. So that up to now, they say that there are at least 10 dimensions. Your great physicist, Guth, G-U-T-H, he even has 11 dimensions. So you see, the final answer is not given. No matter if it has 10 dimension or 11 dimension at the present moment. We don't know what in another 50 years the world will know and how many dimensions the world will know about our universe. The main thing for us is to see that we have a limited concept of the universe. So we start out at least with that insight that the world as we see is not the real universe, that it is actually a prison. Plato said already our prison is the visible universe. That's our prison. We live in that limited sense of only three when we have to do with the infinite. The infinite has not only three dimensions, but also a fourth dimension, which Mrs. Eddy called, as in a summary way, the fourth dimension of spirit. That's another dimension. That's a final dimension, I would say. Not only that, the physicists also see that the universe, as we have it, can become a zero dimension. When it is drawn into the black hole, it disappears. Then space and time disappear. So whatever is drawn into the black holes, which they can see now, that then the dimensions disappear completely, that we have a zero-dimension universe. There is there no more time, no more space. But that's not all. When matter disappears, when the limitations disappear in the black hole, they don't know yet what comes out of that black hole on the other side. If on the other side comes out a multitude of universes, in the plural, So that we must acquaint ourselves with the idea that our concept of the universe is very limited, that it is limited to one universe, and we don't know yet, but we can calculate already that it may be possible, it's still indefinite, that there exist many, many universes. Even Einstein could foresee that. I remember how he said, well, we sit here in a room, in a three-dimensional room, which we can, a three-dimensional space, which we can see, but we don't know if out of another universe, right, a train goes right through this room without that we hear it, without that we see it, without that we have any indication of it, because other universes have different dimensions, which we cannot conceive, which we cannot apprehend. We are built, say, since 3 million years, so to say, since we came down from the trees, we are built the way that we are only seeing a universe in a three-dimensional sense, first in a two-dimensional sense, than in a three-dimensional sense. It's an educated belief that we have. But belief is not science, is not reality. So we can see that we are living nowadays, day in and day out, in a limited universe, in a universe that we do not understand, in a universe that is not of the nature of pure science, and that therefore perhaps our future, perhaps the 7,000-year period is that period which ushers us in into a completely new concept of the universe, where we are no more considering the universe as three or four-dimensional, but as multi-dimensional. How that is, will be, we do not know. We can only guess it, but we do not know. So this brings us to the next page you have, to page 8, which I want to read with you. You have there written out quite a few statements from Mrs. Eddy, and every time perhaps an addition for other references which I have not spelled out, but just the main points I have spelled out here. And we want to read it, and I wrote it out because it's not easy to listen to a lecture that reads out long passages. It's always annoying, it's always tiring, and you lose the thread of thought. What we want to say is the title shows us that there is only one principle of the universe. So no matter how many dimensions we will find in natural science, one thing is sure, and on one thing we build, that there is only one principle of the universe. That's the teaching of Christian Science. And what I want to show is that natural science is diverging towards that statement, that there is only one principle of the universe. No matter then afterwards what are the categories of it, what are the dimensions of it, that is then left still to be investigated. But at the moment, we first have to establish within our consciousness that there is only one principle of the universe, with the accent on universe. This reference that we have here all relate to the universe, not to our health, not to what is man or what is Christ, but now we want to consider what is the whole universe. So we are touching a completely new field of investigation in Christian Science, namely the whole universe. The very first reference we have here, and you can read it as I go along, though I will interrupt the reading from time to time and give in my information so that it is not a long, long sentence or paragraph. And so we read together from Miss Seneni, namely, what are termed in common speech the principle of harmonious vibration? So she begins to speak about a principle, small p, the principle of harmonious vibration. Then, the principle of conservation of numbers in geometry. So she takes here geometry as a field of application and says there is also a principle or many principles like the principle of conservation of numbers. Then a comma, the principle of the inclined plane in mechanics. So mechanics has many, many laws and has many principles. One of them is the principle of the inclined plane in mechanics. So she has already three different fields, namely common speech, the principle in common speech, then the principle in geometry, then the principle in mechanics, etc. They are but an effect of one universal cause. So no matter which field we are touching and what kind of principles we find in the various fields of our experience and of the various disciplines that are being taught at the universities and in school, no matter how many principles are taught, she says, they all belong to one principle capitalized. So there is the cause of all causes. So that there are but an effect of one universal cause, an emanation of the one divine intelligent principle, capitalized, that holds. Now, listen to what she is telling now, because we felt superficially always the very opposite, that Christian Science is teaching the very opposite of what she is teaching here, namely that principle that holds the earth in its orbit. We always felt that the laws of Kepler kept the planets into orbit around the sun, that there were material laws that Kepler was calculating and putting into three big laws in order to show how the planets are turning around the sun. But here, she says, it's that divine principle that holds the earth in its orbit. By spiritual power, not by material power, not by magnetic power, not by gravitational power, as we were been thinking. We were always calculating going to the moon with the laws of gravitation, how to overcome the law of gravitation on Earth. Then when you have overcome it, how the law of gravitation of the moon was attracting then the satellite. So we were thinking that all that is really a matter of natural science with its material laws. But she says it's through spiritual power. Well, that's a great problem, huh? We are facing suddenly. That is, so that holds the earth in its orbit by evolved spiritual power, that commands the waves and the winds. We thought that gravitation is commanding the waves, that tides and floods were commanded by the law of gravitation of the moon. According to the position of the moon, we had tides and we have floods. Tides and, yeah? What is the other one? Tides and? Tide and flood tides out. Okay. That's it. Thank you. Even more that commands the waves and the wind, that mark even the sparrow's fall, so to say, from the infinite to the infinitesimal, and that governs all. All means all. All means not all, and besides that all, something more. It's all. Governs all from the infinitesimal to the infinite, namely God. Then, withdraw God, or that divine principle, from man unto universe, and man unto universe would no longer exist. So, can we see here a great principle of the universe as a spiritual power of the universe? That suddenly that what we are considering all out there is the celestial universe with all the galaxies and the planets and suns and so on and so on. That's a material universe that has nothing to do with Christian science. There are material laws, very exact material laws operating. That's something else, that's quite a different field. But if we read Mrs. Eddy's teaching, then we suddenly begin to see that she includes all that, that she includes the whole universe and is able to reduce all the principles of all the various fields of mechanics, of geometry, and right down to one spiritual principle, infinite principle, that governs through spiritual power and not through material power. So we are confronted with quite a new subject. Wouldn't you say so? She says in miscellaneous writing the next quote, each successive period of progress, again we have periods of progress, and successive, again she shows that the idea of Christian Science will develop, will gather new insights, is a period more humane and spiritual. So every new period will be more spiritual. And so we will have to see if that actually so. Is it actually so that every new discovery the natural scientists make, is that an increase in material knowledge, or is it an increase in spiritual insight? That's a big question we have to ask and to answer, or try to answer this week. The only logical conclusion is that all is mind. Again, that term all becomes so important this week. All is mind and its manifestation. All is mind and its manifestation. Namely, from the rolling of worlds in the most subtle ether, right down to a potato patch. This is all mind. Well, we were thinking, well, a potato patch is just dirt, just earth, and it's just matter, nothing more than matter. And what has that to do with a spiritual principle? We felt that has nothing to do. That's erroneous. And we were putting it away instead of including it and say, all is mind, and therefore includes the rolling of the worlds, right down to the potato patch. Right down to the potato patch. What a new question we are putting forward. Quite something terrific. I remember a few years ago, in Europe, you couldn't know that, one of the big nuclear physicists, Weizsäcker, he's the brother of the president of Germany, he was working during the World War on the atomic bomb, and he was working so that Hitler didn't find out that he was working against it. He didn't want Germany to have the atomic bomb. So he, as a physicist, could see that physics is going astray. And therefore he saw that physics is not the answer to the world, and so he began to study philosophy and became professor of philosophy. So he joined, so to say, nuclear physics with philosophy. And he's a most interesting man, and he was on the TV one day interviewed in a longer interview, and he was talking about how the universe is governed by one law. And the interviewer said to him, how can you conceive how this multivarious world can be reduced to one law only? He could also have said to one principle only. How can you conceive of that? That whole universe can be brought back and reduced right down to one law, to one principle. And as I remember, he didn't answer at once. Whereas usually he answered at once with a very clear answer, he stopped and was thinking. And then it was interesting what he said. He said, how can you conceive of the opposite? This would be even more difficult to answer. Two principles, we can say two or more principles, two principles are not principle. They are just not principle. And 1,000 principles are no principles at all, but chaos. The world is not that chaotic. So he said, how can one even think of it, that there are many principles? There is only one principle, because when he went on naturally to explain that a little bit, he said that one principle could destroy at once the other principle. Because if you have two principles or more principles, they would destroy each other and you would have nothing at all. Just as he said, the world would be chaotic. Can you see that already those deep thinkers are seeing that there is only one principle in the universe? No matter if we find out in the various disciplines all sorts of principles, but they are all principles with a small p, all under the one cause, the divine infinite principle, capitalized. Yes. So that's about that one principle. If we look into the world, we conceive of the world also very much under the overall tone that there are forces operating in the world. What are these forces? The physicists are calculating these forces, the forces of gravitation, of adhesion, of cohesion, all these various forces. Then in nuclear physics, the weak forces, the strong forces, gravitation, electromagnetic forces, they're all forces, forces, forces. And so we conceive of the universe as a universe of forces. How does Mrs. Eddy conceive of forces? And we have read that hundreds of times. But perhaps you have read it like I have read it hundreds of times and was a bit insecure about what Mrs. Eddy said. I just couldn't quite get it. It just seems to be contradicting. Namely, we were reading time over and time over. The following you have under forces: adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind capitalized. We were taught in school that adhesion, cohesion, and attraction were material forces. They're absolutely material forces. Forces that exist, matter to matter, forces within matter, and so on, between matter, attraction. And they're calling them physical, material, and she calls it that they are properties of mind, capital M. Again, it is very surprising. They belong to divine principle, capitalized. So before we had already seen that it's principle that launched the earth into its orbit. Now it is that, again, that these forces are not forces of matter, they are forces of mind, and that they belong to the divine principle, and support, just make a note now of the next term, the equipoise, we read that equipoise, of that thought force, not knowing that this is a terrific important point in for the universe, support the equipoise of that thought force which launched the earth into its orbit. Can you see again that it is a principle that launched the earth in its orbit? Wasn't it the Big Bang that launched the earth into its orbit? Is the Big Bang mind? We didn't think that way. We thought of a terrific force, of a terrific heat. But she said that launched the earth into its orbit and said to the proud wave, listen to that, because we come back to it, thus far and no further. Thus far, stop, and not further. Why on earth? This is a quote from the Bible. They already knew quite a bit about what we didn't know. And we come back to that. You will see how important these quotes are. Well, up to this point, just see that we have to change somehow our attitudes towards the world and not see the world just as a material world, not to see it as a world of forces, of material forces, but somehow a world of mind that is governed by the one infinite principle, mind and principle. Those two terms that Mrs. Eddy introduced after the Bible. The Bible didn't have those two terms. These are the two synonymous terms that Mrs. Eddy introduced and said, God is mind and God is principle. Or we take the next reference also about forces. Something which puzzled me, I must honestly say that, until very recently it puzzled me. I just couldn't quite comprehend what she meant. She said, we tread on forces. Just four terms, we tread on forces. Do we tread on forces? Did we make sense of that? Could we see that we are treading on forces? We couldn't. I'm sure nobody could. And yet it is so. The further investigation into the universe will show that.